Welcome to another episode of the Open Science Radio. Today is Thursday, the 19th of January, 2023. So it's still kind of the new year, and we hope to see a lot of open science happening in this new year. And today it's a great pleasure to have at first Matthias with me. Hi, Matthias.
Good morning.
But more importantly, we found the person to cover one very important topic, the NFDI, the National Research Data Infrastructure. And we could convince Jörg Surefetter, the director of the NFDI, to talk with us. Hi, Jörg.
Hi, Konrad. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So great that you made it and that we can discuss this topic with you a little bit. So this is a huge topic, in my opinion, and we have quite some topics in front of us to cover this and to describe what it's all about. But before we do this, we would like to have a look at your career and how you got to the position where you are now. Maybe you can briefly introduce your scientific career. You're coming from the, I would say, engineering field in the broader sense. You worked a lot of knowledge management, so on. So a very important topic that also contributes to NFDI, in my opinion, very strongly. So maybe we can start. What did you study, and how did you get to the point where you're today?
Yes, thank you for giving me the chance to introduce myself. So I studied industrial engineering, which covers a broad spectrum of topics, in particular engineering, but also economics and then computer science. And computer science really attracted me a lot. So at the end of the day, I did my diploma thesis in the area of applied informatics, and then started a PhD in that topic. It was the particular topic of knowledge representation using ontologies and semantic technologies for a better knowledge management in companies. So it was kind of an applied topic, or it was a research topic with many applications in industry. Let's phrase it this way. And this really opened for me this opened the box of research to me. And it was the early 2000s when this research area really exploded. The ontologies became a popular topic. A lot of research went into this direction. And it was the area when Tim Berners-Lee phrased his vision of a semantic web, where data are explicitly marked with annotations and with metadata. And these metadata are structured according to ontologies, and semantic technologies provide access to such data. So it was really a starting period for a long endeavor, you could say, of research work. And I did my particular PhD. I finished my PhD in 2003 and then became a postdoc in the same institute. It was at the University of Karlsruhe. It was a huge research community globally. So I had a lot of chances to meet international colleagues at conferences, to exchange our ideas and to work on these topics. I worked at the University of Karlsruhe until 2007, very actively, and then started to work for a big German company, SAP, in the same area, semantic technologies. And it was really that transition of research work into industrial practice that attracted me for this next career stage. It was a huge endeavor in Germany. With many partners, it was a widespread network of industrial partners and research partners who worked on applying semantic technologies to various fields, from medicine to industrial engineering. Then after 2 years, I got the offer to start as the head of the department of a Leibniz Institute, the Geisels-Leibniz Institute for Social Sciences. And that was a new environment for me. I didn't know much of Leibniz Institutes and extra university funding. So it was really a new opportunity and a new challenge. And heading a department really included building applications. And at the same time, it was a research infrastructure. So I stepped a little bit back into research. It was a combination of a professorship at university. So a little dream of myself became true. And that was becoming a professor in the area of applied computer science. It was a difficult time for the institute. So after 6 months, I stepped up, you could say, as a president of the institute. And I was then responsible for almost 300 persons in the infrastructure area of social sciences. It was and is still the largest German infrastructure for social sciences. The application area was new to me, social sciences, and also the leadership of a big institute was new to me. So it was quite a challenging task, but it was also very rewarding because it was really cool to work with very experienced people, also with new people, and to set up a new vision for the institute. And actually, it was the beginning of my career in data archiving, long-term preservation, and making research data available. The FAIR principles hadn't been invented then. Back then, it was 2011 when I started as a president. But actually, what we were doing was doing exactly that. We founded a registration agency where research data could be assigned with metadata, a metadata schema, and then they were being made available along with the DOI. So a digital object identifier. And by that, every data set became uniquely identifiable. And you could say the metadata schema provided like an ID for a data set. So it described the name of the data set, the originators, what actually the content is. And it was a first step towards providing access on a larger scale to research data. Then in 2015, I received the opportunity to switch to the KIT. So my former academic birthplace, the University of Karlsruhe, turned into the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology. And I had the pleasure and the honor to start there as a professor for applied computer science. Actually, it was the research group of my doctor father, which I could follow up. And that was an opportunity I could not neglect, even though being president of a Leibniz Institute was a very fulfilling job. So I started going back to research academia, you could say, doing teaching on a large scale, the introduction of computer science, knowledge technologies, applied AI, that were my topics. And I did this for 5 years until 2020. And then the next opportunity waited for me and the next challenge. And that was really building up a national infrastructure on research data from scratch. And that was really something completely new. So there were many ideas. There was great work as a solid base. It was the so-called financing for about 10 years, which made the environment quite stable financially. But it was this big idea to have a unique, sustainable, interdisciplinary approach to establish a FAIR research data management in Germany. And I couldn't resist. So in March 2020, I started my new position as a director of NFDI.
Great, thank you. And we see you had quite an academic life already. And I guess you did a very good job because otherwise this position wouldn't have been offered to you. We dive a little bit now into actually our core topic. And so thank you for showing this path that you had so far. And people might ask, so it's obvious you're German speaking, Matthias and I are German speaking. Why do we do this here in English? The reason for this is that the topic that we will discuss in depth today is the National Research Data Infrastructure, in German, Nationale Forschungsdateninfrastruktur. And we think this is could serve as a template also for other countries. And we know other countries are looking at this. And it's always that research is happening on a global scale, and especially this kind of infrastructure is often serving communities that are distributed across the whole world. And this is why we decided to do this here in English. So let's try to get this topic a little bit on the table now. And this is now a challenge for you. Can you try to describe the NFDI in around 30 seconds before we dive deeper into that?
All right, I'll give it a try. And you tell me whether it has been 30 seconds or not.
Right.
So the National Research Data Infrastructure is an interdisciplinary approach to make research data available at your fingertips. And for that, we build on an approach where all research disciplines work together. And we come up with domain-specific solutions, and we come up with central services that glue together all the domain-specific solutions.
So 28 seconds. Oh, wow. Cool. Nice.
I didn't practice before, so it was the first chance.
Perfect, yeah. Yeah. And we see this covering a lot of things. And we would like to dive into this a little bit. So let's start maybe with the history of how we got there. And you mentioned already the FAIR principles. So basically, these core ideas for research data management, that the data should be findable, accessible, interoperable, reusable. You mentioned metadata already a lot. And this all started with this publication in 2016, where the FAIR principles were kind of, presented. But as you said before, I mean, the concept of FAIR was there before, and the thoughts and ideas regarding this were there before, and this paper was kind of a good way of bundling this and giving this a name. How did this start then in Germany to get in the direction of the NFDI as we have it today?
Mm-hmm. So the FAIR guiding principles for scientific data management and stewardship, that is the actual title of the well-known FAIR paper, that was really coming in the tradition of people working in the semantic technologies area, but it included also many more people coming from data stewardship and research data infrastructure. And by bringing together these two worlds, that really made the difference, I think, with the paper. And it was just the right time to formulate these principles. And it was a smart way of formulating the principles, because they didn't formulate a technical solution, but they rather formulated principles which can be implemented in a number of different ways. But ultimately, you want to achieve the goal to make the data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. And I think this was a very good starting point. In Germany, there was also a huge community in semantic technologies at that point of time. I was part of that community, for example, during my very active research years. And so there was a large visibility of what the authors were doing in that area. And so it was quite easy to pick that idea up in many areas. First of all, there was national funding for coming up with domain-specific solutions in that area. But also, there was this discussion in the Rat for Informationsinfrastruktur and the Council for Information Infrastructures, or short RFII, where key people in Germany discussed what does it mean to have the FAIR principles and what do we need to do in Germany to come up with a holistic approach for research data management. And so in 2016, it was also the year of the recommendation of the RFAI. In Germany, the paper is called Leistung aus Vielfalt. So it's a good question how to translate this. How do you translate
performance light? From diversity or something?
Sorry?
Performance from diversity or?
Yeah, that's a very good
services
very good
from
shot.
Diversity.
Yeah. Performance in a sense of we are creating something that is doing something valuable and which is running for some time. And the power comes actually from knowing and benefiting from the different disciplines. And bringing together the disciplines is what NFDI aims for at the core. Also, performance from diversity gives room to diversity, which I think is very important, because the different research communities have a different status, you could say, where they start from. In some disciplines, you have a lot of research data and all of them are digital. In other disciplines, you have a lot of research data, but none of them are digital. And you have everything in between the spectrum, mm-hmm. including communities who were only beginning to understand that research data is something they could work with. And in 2016, this was really preparing the ground for the national initiative.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's amazing this kind of visionary thoughts that went in there, because one would guess in the beginning that as the different communities have so different problems, different starting points, and struggling with different parts of this research data management, that putting all this together, that this can be maybe helpful for all of them. And I think this idea, had some risk, but if we look at this today, I think this is, they were right when they did this and suggested that, right? If we look at this, starting from that paper, how was it then politically happening? What was the next step that required to get to the implementation of the NFDI?
Mm-hmm. So I think it was a big shot, actually, to publish that recommendation. And what followed was a lot of tedious work to convince people in Germany, especially the political area. And it was successfully done. So within 2016 and 2018, a lot of discussions took place on many different levels, especially on the federal state level, but also on the national level. Because at the end of the day, what happened in 2018, to make a long story short, was this finance, which was being offered from politics, which is a 10-year base, includes several rounds of several finance rounds, includes a process to start the whole thing up, to come up with this idea of so-called consortia who are domain specific, then this idea of bringing all these consortia together in a national infrastructure. So within 2 years, I think preparing round had to do a lot of with convincing politicians and political decision makers to fund this huge endeavor and also to put in enough money for this huge endeavor. Because at the end of the day, the aim is and has always been to address all research disciplines. And that requires to understand what are the next big steps in every single research discipline and what are the big steps that we all have to go together so that becomes what we will later talk about, one NFDI, just to put this elephant into the room, to make the sum more than to make the whole more than the sum of the pieces. And this has to be a process which takes several years because it has to create trust. It has to create understanding of what the problems are. And it has to be team building because we want to solve this in an interdisciplinary way. And the disciplines are very different. So if you're a researcher, you might not be aware that all the guiding principles you have in your own research area may not hold for other research disciplines. And I make an example here. So I come from computer science. Publishing a paper means writing a paper, sending it in. Then there usually is a rigid process with sometimes double-blind reviews, huge discussions. Then papers are accepted and presented at a conference. And at the same time, the proceedings are being published. And there are other disciplines who have similar processes. But there are also research communities that have a completely different process here, which is also fine. So it's just a different tradition in which research is being conducted. Some other conferences, they invite people to give talks. Then there are very good discussions at the conference. And then later on, you summarize what the discussions have been. So this is a different approach for doing research. And bringing them together, these communities, and saying, we want an interdisciplinary approach where every community contributes in a fruitful and positive way. This needs a trust level, which first has to be created, and that cannot be achieved on the fly. So politics had to be convinced that this is an endeavor which might take some time.
Through this process of this idea growing, maybe even recognizing that there is a certain demand in order to progress, like collaboration within the different sciences, there is something happening across Europe and across the world at the same time, right? So the topic of research data has been in 2016, I think, already there for a couple of years. And I think if we look globally or internationally at it, we can see that in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, the Research Data Alliance has already come to being, which is, if I remember correctly, kind of a common approach in between the European Commission, the National Science Foundation, and NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, if I'm not mistaken, to kind of build the technical bridges, but also the implicit social bridges for being able to share research data openly. And from 2015 on, we see the European Open Science Cloud taking shape as something more than only an idea. And I think it was the life or the start of the life of the European Open Science Cloud, and the idea of the NFDI taking shape is fairly close in terms of time relation, if I'm not mistaken, right? EOSC is a year before 2015 started, and then the founding conference or event was in 2018, so it's fairly at the same time. How much of these international approaches and movements have been taken into consideration while formulating and describing what NFDI is doing?
Mm-hmm. So I think there was an overlap of key people driving forward the topics on a national level and on the international level. So for example, our own funder, the BMBF, the German Ministry for Research and Education, they on the one hand took up this idea of the RFII, the paper, and discussed this along with the federal states. And at the same time, they were engaged on the European level to find a solution to start up a European infrastructure, which then has been called European Open Science Cloud, the EOSC. So it happened at the same time, and there was an overlap of persons who had the same ideas. And I think this was a very good idea, because at the end of the day, research is not bound to national borders. At least this is how my ideal vision of research has always been and still is, despite the fact that the world has become much more national recently. But research benefits from the, let's say, borderless exchange of ideas and putting the best people onto the hardest problems to solve them efficiently. And so I think also a research infrastructure like NFDI has to have an international perspective. And for us, the European perspective, of course, it's the next bigger thing. But I fully agree with RDA. We also have a global endeavor, and we are embedded into that global endeavor. And that EOSC and NFDI have a parallel steps that still holds true today. So if we jump from the past to today and look what is recently being happening, then we see that it is almost in parallel and almost with the same pace, you could say, with a certain respect, that the EOSC has created a secretary. They hired people. We created the NFDI directorate. We hired people. We started task forces. They started task forces, and there are overlapping topics. And we are now in a position to align these two efforts more and more and to intertwine them. And I think this year, 2023, will be the year when the national and the international activities really will get traction and start to glow together. And the first implementations will show the benefits of what can be done. Hmm. If we look, for example, at, maybe it's too early, I don't know, so please tell me if we talk about this later. But if we look, for example, into what is being done, then we see that on the domain level, let's take agriculture as an example. Of course, this is a national topic, and we have a lot of national research. But I mean, food and agriculture, if we take one particular topic of agriculture, this is an endeavor that we have to solve globally. So we have to come up with at least discussions on European and global level, and we have to find solutions to work with data, not only from Germany, but also from other countries, to make them comparable, to interlink them, and then to find solutions that really have a global spirit, let's say it like this. We won't be very successful if we limit ourselves to only national scientific questions. And that holds true for many, if not all, scientific research areas.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of always the fascinating fact of diversity being, or that could be found throughout the systems in many, many places, not only because we have collaborations across borders, political borders, country borders, but also we have a lot of movement inside the research community. We have researchers from other countries living in Germany. We have German researchers living in other countries. We have research data doesn't stop at borders at a passport from a specific country, right? It's if you look at, for example, especially in social sciences, if you look at people, you're automatically looking at least a group of people coming from completely diverse cultural backgrounds from different countries. So you can find this diversity aspect in all of these fundamental strings that form the basement of research and of science and of these societal systems that are neighboring each other, that influence each other. So even with something that is mainly nationally, like the agricultural system, even that system is so intertwined with every system and with every country around it, due to exporting food in other countries, but also taking crops from other countries, taking, I don't know what, the fertilizers that are maybe not produced only in Germany, but in other countries. All these aspects really grow into each other and formulate a fundamental argument for looking at this on a larger scale. So that makes very sense. And it's actually exciting, finally, because I remember us in 2014 and 15 asking ourselves, what the heck is EOSC going to be? And for a long time, or at least what felt for a long time, for 2 or 3 years, nobody really had an idea that was really graspable. And now that really takes shape. And suddenly we talk about initiatives that have now projects running within them. We have researchers. We have the first research results. We're now talking about infrastructure that is being available for researchers and that has a strategic vision what it wants to be in a couple of years. So that's really exciting for me.
Absolutely. And I would like to make a technical example to make it a little bit more concrete. So how infrastructure can change the ways we are working. That is a general view now, but I'd like to make a concrete example, and that is the EDROAM system. Probably you don't ask what is this, you just use it. And that is a sign of a good infrastructure. If the infrastructure is invisible and is part of your daily work, then usually it is a successful infrastructure. And for many years, there were many preparatory meetings and works. And then for me, it was actually during my time as a president of GESIS, when I was sitting, I really remember that point of time. I was sitting at the airport in Oslo, waiting on my plane, heading back. We just had a Chester meeting about European social science data infrastructure. So we already worked on these topics. And suddenly my laptop said, you've got mails. I didn't realize. I said, okay. So I answered my emails. And then I stopped thinking, because at that point of time, I didn't have an LTE mobile phone or something which would provide me access to any kind of wireless network. And my laptop by itself connected to the EDROAM provided at the airport. And my Outlook did what it usually did. It just downloaded my emails and informed me about that. And it really made click to me. And I said, oh, this is cool. Why do I have in this public place suddenly access to a free wireless LAN? And then I realized what the infrastructure already was capable of. And I didn't know of that infrastructure before, honestly spoken. I knew that from my own university, home university. I knew that there was an EDROAM. So I was, this is okay, but so what's the point? And then suddenly there was this moment in time that changed my view on the whole thing. And by now, I think if you ask students, probably they know it. Maybe they don't know it, but most of them will use it during their daily life, without realizing what kind of infrastructure this is. So it really changed the way we are working, studying, doing research in certain aspects. And this is what we aim to do with NFDI. We want to establish a research data management that is successful, that is embedded into the daily routines in a, let's say, seamless manner. This is a big word, I know. But we really need to take care of that this is as embedded into the daily routines of researchers as possible. And solving problems so that they don't have to worry about this, making their research more efficient. And maybe this gives an idea of what we are trying to establish with this research data infrastructure. And the ultimate aim, of course, is to provide access to research data whenever you need it.
Mm-hmm. And this awareness that research data is important and needs special management treatment, this is also something that, I mean, happened in the, let's say, last decade, right? And that this kind of return of investment is much higher if we don't only think about a project that is generating data, not only data, also the code, so the software and the computational models, that if we take care of this, so much benefit can be gained. I think this transition or this change of awareness was key in order to establish all that. And with this NFDI, I mean, we try to implement this idea that if research data is properly managed and is accessible and following all these principles and ideally is also open, that so many more things can be done with this and many more people are benefiting from that. So let's see. I mean, after now this kind of historical perspective and how we got there, let's see, where do we stand now very roughly? So what is the NFDI right now if we look at that?
Thank you for the question. I mean, this is really like a Steilpass, you would say in Germany. Steile Flanke. Where are we now? In 2003, for the first time, we can claim a certain completeness of NFDI from a certain perspective. Why is that the case? Well, if you look at NFDI, it's a number of strings that are being intertwined. Let's have this picture here to have a nice carpet at the end of the day. And the strings we are talking about are the following ones. First of all, it's the very rigid selection process for the so-called NFDI consortium. Now, what is a consortium? It is an agglomeration of typically 15 to 30 partners, sometimes even up to 80 partners, coming from one particular domain. Let's make one example. NFDI for culture brings together researchers from all the different cultural disciplines, from performing arts to musicology, you name it. And all the partners are relevant to come up with formulating the big problems of digitization and digital shift in the cultural sciences. And this was one example for one consortium. Now we have 19 so-called funded consortia at the moment, which means we have the natural sciences, including material sciences, the life sciences, the social sciences. In every discipline, we have at least one consortium forming up 19. And this year in March, we will have another 8 consortia joining this whole scenario. And with 27 carefully selected consortia, we are what the ultimate, so we have achieved what the ultimate goal was. And the ultimate goal was to select in 3 rounds up to 30 consortia. So this process has come to a certain end. So beginning 1st of March, we will have all of them on board. Some of them started 2 years ago. That was the so-called first round of consortia. And they paved the way, you could say, for the two following rounds. So we will be much faster now integrating the third round into the up and running system, which is really nice. So this is one of the strings. A second string I would like to mention is the foundation of the NFDI directorate, which is what I'm heading as an NFDI director. And this is a central unit, you could say, headed in Karlsruhe, which has the ultimate goal to strengthen the collaboration between the different consortia and to really push forward the national idea of all of this. So to establish the exchange of ideas and the exchange of knowledge and to between different scientific disciplines and infrastructure, and also to build up a governance structure where everybody has a well-defined role and can perform in this role. And we have successfully created this organization. It's a non-for-profit organization. At the moment, my team has 17 people, almost 18. you could say. And what we are doing is we talk to the whole network, which means it's a network of roughly 800 people working in these by now 19, soon 27 consortia. So it will soon be over 1,000 people working in different areas of NFDI. And our aim as directorate is to coordinate and to push forward this whole network in central areas. We cannot do this by ourselves. And thankfully, we have organs like the consortia assembly, where the different consortia come together. So it's 19 spokespersons from the consortia, and it's four spokespersons from so-called cross-sectional sections. And there we jointly formulate things like a joint vision, like a joint mission. We formulate what will be central services that our whole network needs. And we bring together once and again, and in a continuous manner, people from different disciplines in the interdisciplinary way. And this is where the first trust level has been established at the consortia assembly. This is where people from social sciences frequently talk to people from nature sciences, frequently talk to people from life sciences, and so on and so forth. They all know each other. And jointly, they did something very great last year, which will also start this year. And this was to start up a so-called base for NFDI initiative. And this, when I'm talking about central services, it's this base for NFDI initiative that has been started last year and that just will be part of the 8 upcoming consortia. And this is the last thing which I wanted to mention here. It's this joint technical work that we will be starting this year. It's, for example, this idea to have a joint identity management for whole Germany. So on top of EDO-ROAM, there's something like EDO-GAIN, for example, as an idea on an international level, but someone has to establish it and someone has to come up with means for an identity management. And this is one of the first things we want to address in NFDI this year, to have a central service where you could register with your home address from your own university or your own Fraunhofer, Leibniz, Helmholtz, or Max Planck Institute into this infrastructure, authenticate yourself, and then start working with cool research data, which is being made available from our infrastructure. So this year is really this first level of completeness and this first level of now we can shape a joint vision, a joint mission, and we start executing with concrete tasks and with concrete offers. So I foresee that this year also the first offers for researchers will be made available, so they can log in, they can work with the offers, and hopefully do better research.
And I mean, just listening to this, I hope it becomes obvious what kind of major task this is to bring all that together, right? And I forgot my disclaimer. So I'm speaker of one of these consortia, so I don't have a neutral position here. So I'm speaker for NFDI from Microbota, and I have this inside view. And one has to consider what you just said. It means we bring the perspective of so many different research communities together and try to have this joint vision, this joint infrastructure, and these joint solutions. And this needs a lot of communication. And I think you don't even count how many hours you talk to people and bring this together. And what I find so fascinating is the enthusiasm regarding this. So people involved in this, they are convinced that this will work out and that this will be really a good solution for everyone. While it's taking a lot of steps and is nothing easy, it's still this vision in front of us getting to a better place with this is really dominating. And I just have to thank you for driving all this and bringing people together and also translating, right? And you mentioned this before, the different communities have very different starting points and very different practices. And putting all that together is not easy. And the first infrastructure to build this infrastructure is actually setting up this nonprofit association, having a directorate, having all these committees like board of trustees, scientific senates, member assembly of the association, consortia assembly, and all these kind of things that were not before there, right? And that needed to also be organized and put together. What is your learning out of this? What was your experience with that, setting this all up?
That is a very good question. Maybe one of my first learnings is kind of an intuitive thing, which I learned many times in my life. And but once again, it's this really think big and start small. Mm-hmm. And this might sound a bit too trivial, but NFVI is a big shot. But really to progress, you have always to think of the smallest possible next step that can be done. And then you have to do the step, do the step, right? Execute. So you need to have a strategic vision, to make people understand what the goal is and what their role can be in this scenario. And at the end of the day, it's about, we have lots of liberty in the system. So I have few sticks. I have lots of carrots, but actually I have only few sticks, very few. And in reality, it turned out I don't need the sticks at the moment, which is very good. So there's a lot of enthusiasm. We have people who are working many years in kind to set up the proposals like you did for your own microbiota. So it was really at the core of what people wanted for their community. And suddenly there was this funding which offered them an opportunity to fund these initiatives. But they had to have a long, a long atom, a long breath, mm-hmm. because some of the consortia had two or three approaches to finally being funded. Some of them were disregarded, which is also hard. You worked very hard to bring together your community, to set up this proposal, lots of discussions, what do we actually want to do? And then finally you get this money, and then the actual work is just starting, right? Mm-hmm. So I really feel privileged that I can work with a lot of people in my role as a director that have this spirit, that say we want to push forward research and we share this vision and we invest a lot of time, which is not directly funded by NFDI, but we do this because we think it's necessary. And then they get a lot of funding and they can start realizing their dreams and ideas. And that has worked out very nicely. So this is really one of my biggest and best lessons learned.
Wonderful. If we look at the association, so there are different parts. So you mentioned already the consortia assembly. There are other bodies in there, like the board of trustees. What is their task, for example?
Mm-hmm. So as a German association, I would actually start with a members mm-hmm. assembly, but we could also start with a board of trustees if you want.
No, just start whatever feels best to you.
But maybe the key message is, as an association, we have a governance structure, and every German association needs to have a members assembly. So this is where it all begins for a German association. And that raises the question, who are the members of NFDI? Who are the members of the association? And actually, there's a little history. I think the first approach was to say the consortia actually will become members. That was being discussed on the political level when they framed the funding scheme and when they envisioned how all this should be run. But actually, there's this tricky issue of that you need to be a legal entity to become a member of the association. And the consortia, as of now, are not legal entities for very good reasons. And this is a longer discussion, which I would not open up right now. So the next solution was to say, okay, so let's take the organizations who actually participate in the consortia. And that works very well. And that is the solution that we established. We by now have 222 organizations from Germany as members in NFDI. And members are a lot of universities, a lot of extra university institutes, including all big alliance members. So it's Helmholtz, Max Planck, Fraunhofer, Leibniz. They all are being part of that. Little disclaimer, Max Planck is still working on it. But I'm very optimistic. So we have partners from really the whole research landscape in Germany as members. And so the members assembly is really where it all starts. Then we have the board of trustees, which you mentioned. And this is, you could say, our controlling governance body or organ. That is where the BMBF and the federal states, so the state and the federal states are being represented. But also we have researchers who are being sent from the network into the Board of Trustees. And that balances the political view with the research and the research infrastructure view. And they make important financial decisions. For example, they hire the director of NFDI, for example. So they really are the controlling board, as typical for such a board of trustees. Then we have the Scientific Senate. And this is, you could say, the strategic organ that governs and steers the long-term perspective of NFDI. And as a director, I have the privilege to head the Scientific Senate in my role as the director of NFDI. But in total, we are 13 members. So the 12 other members come from three different places. So first, the political area, the GWK, sends up four persons. Then the Alliance is sending four persons, and also four persons are being sent from the network. So again, you have a nice balance of individuals coming from different backgrounds to steer the long-term vision from NFDI. And last but not least, we have the Consortia Assembly, which I already introduced. And this gives me the chance to name or to quickly highlight the sections, because along to the, at the moment, 19 consortia, we also have four sections. It's a section on infrastructure. It's a section on metadata and provenance. It's a section on education and training. And it's a section on ethical and legal, ethical, legal and social aspects. And these sections are cross-disciplinary, so they span across the 19 consortia and bring together people to work on these central topics. And they are also being present in the consortia assembly. So the consortia assembly, to me, I always say, it's the heart of operations, you could say, where we ultimately make decisions for the whole network. And I'm, as a director, frequently attend the consortia assembly as a guest.
And the idea of the consortia, I mean, this was already formed even kind of before or very early, right? Because these cross-cutting topics are very obvious and were obvious and were formulated. Now with the sections, we have kind of the implementation of these ideas and their different working groups that are then focusing on certain parts and putting documents together and trying to put these strings, to align all these strings. I guess this is also, again, one of these important places where really I would even say on a working level, the different disciplines come together and try to form solutions, which is also very, interesting and very unique situation, I guess, that, as you've mentioned before, that social scientists talk suddenly to people from, human genomics and so on. If we look maybe again at a higher level or at the foundations again, I think we have not mentioned this, the funding of all this, and the funding. So how much funds are available? Because you said we have this collection of consortia. They were often coming from communities that were kind of waiting for implementing these kind of infrastructures and concepts. So if we look at the funding, where does the money comes from and how much is available? And if we think in terms of the procedure, how the consortia were formed, what was the way of getting there?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, how did the consortia being selected, and then how much money is available, maybe in that order? So it was a rigid process which was being set up and provided by the DFG, by the German Research Foundation, and they did a marvelous job in bringing together experts from a lot of areas. And since so many people from Germany are engaged in all these endeavors, it was quite tricky to find enough people who did not have any conflict of interest here. So it was a huge effort also there. And then in these three rounds, you had presentations, careful selections, you had different stages where reviewers put their reviews into place, and then the reviews were summarized. All the reviews were put on the table and balanced, and there was a final strategic discussion on top of everything. So it was I would like to make a very big compliment to the DFG. I think it was a very carefully thought of process that has been executed with a very high level of professionality. At least this is how I experienced this as a guest in various meetings from the reviewing board. And I was really, I think there aren't many organizations around that can provide such an infrastructure. Maybe the DFG is the only one that can do it in Germany. And they did it in a marvelous way. So I was very positively thrilled, you could say, when I first learned how this whole thing went through. But it was a lot of effort for many people. One has to say at the same time, and it was a long endeavor. Now, why did people invest so many effort? Well, because there are some carrots that were put into place. So the financing of the individual consortium ranges between, let's say, 2.5 and 4 million, somewhere in between. We have smaller consortia, we have bigger consortia, and it really depends on what they put on their agenda to be solved. So it wasn't the strategy for everyone to make it as big as possible. We also have some consortia who said, no, we want to be on the lower bound because the task is very focused that we want to address. And this is the money we need. So I think it was well thought of also on the level of consortia. And then summing up everything at the end of the day, by financing up to 30 consortia, the general frame was up to 30 million euros per year. For the final stage. So this year we are beginning to finally reach the final finance border. But at the end of the day, of course, it depends on how many consortia are being funded and how much money does every consortium get. So we will not have the full 90 million euro per year that initially were being thought of, but we have slightly less money that is being spent there.
Mm-hmm. And the distribution of these funds are is also part of this whole infrastructure and putting this into place, and I guess also kind of complicated, which maybe not cover here. But also this, I mean, has to be kept in mind while the NFDI was started a while ago, setting all this flows and so on. This was quite some work, I can say also from my own perspective here. And so again, this is all infrastructure that is invisible and that first needed to be established, and that is part of making the technical solutions then possible. But this organizatory part first had to happen. My question should we briefly go through the different consortia, and maybe here already a teaser. We are planning to talk to some of the consortia later in the other episodes, maybe not all of them, but a few of them, in order to give a few perspectives and maybe also visit some of the sections that you mentioned before. The sections are, as said, the key part for bringing this together and implementing the actual solutions, and also the kind of partially the preparation for base for NFDI. Would it make sense to walk us through the different consortia, maybe in the rounds that we followed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to.
Let's do this. Mm-hmm. So.
So how do we do this?
Let's
what is your plan?
Let's maybe start with the first round, and because as you said, they did a great job in terms of making the ground for the others. For us, it's much, much easier. So NFDR for Microbota is a consortium of the second round, and we know all the struggles that happened already before, and for us it was maybe much easier. So let's start with the very first round.
Yeah. I make a quick pitch. Yes. Let's do it like this. Sorted alphabetically, probably it's data plant to start with. This is really about plant research data, and brings together a consortium that does basic plant research and that faces the challenge of establishing, an RDM system, of course, research data management, for the collection, processing, exchange, and research archiving of research data sets in this area. And they are working especially on, providing a context of research data. So for them, it's very important to know in which context research data have been collected. And so they come up with a metadata schema, for example, to do that, and with an infrastructure, software and services to actually provide this context. Is this the level of detail which is
absolutely
okay?
I guess we have basically 30 across us, so I hope this is not a too hard job for you going through all this, but it'll be great. I think it's for the listeners. It's good to get a quick overview. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
If you can maintain that for all of them, you'll find me on the ground worshipping you forever.
Okay, we recorded that. So I can come back to that.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Okay, let me think. So next would be then GHGA, I guess. That's the German Human Genome Phenome Archive. And this really is an endeavor that from the very beginning was embedded into a European perspective. And it's really something special, you could say, which is being done there. They collect the genomic data from patients, which is a key technology in biomedical research, as many of you know. And of course, Konrad, to you, it's a home turf. This type of data is generated in diagnostics and personalized therapies. And we really need this data to fight many different diseases. Maybe it's not so known, but we have many so-called rare diseases. The problem is we have lots of these rare diseases. What does it mean to have a rare disease? It's a disease which is maybe not like cancer, which is a very common disease, unfortunately. So we have many patients and we have many data about this. But we have a lot of diseases where the numbers of patients are not so big, but those patients are suffering, and struggling, of course, from their diseases. So the problem there is to get enough data to be, for example, statistically significant, to be able to detect things. And so they come up with clever ways of bringing together the data that are there, to have a critical mass of data. And that is really at the core, from my perspective. I hope it's correctly being rephrased from DHCA. And we not only do this in Germany, but we also do this on the European perspective. So you could say that GHGA is a German or a national node of the European, which is called the European Genome Phenome Archive, so the EGA. And so the GHGA and EGA, they complement each other.
Quick advertisement at this point in time. The GHGA also has a fantastic podcast, Der Code des Lebens, Code of Life. So
yeah,
recommendation true. At this point.
Yeah, it's really cool. I also listen to that frequently. It's nicely done. Yeah, kudos. let's continue with Consort SVD. It's the Consortium for the Social, Educational, Behavioral and Economical Sciences. So that you could say I have a little more in-depth knowledge because I was working for the Gesis Leibniz Institute, who is the coordinator. And this is really strengthening, widening and deepening the access to social science, behavioral, educational, economical data sets. In fact, this community has a long and strong tradition in working with data sets. And so data archiving, for example, is being done at a data archive on a national and international level already. And what Consort SVD does is bringing together as an already existing infrastructure of so-called research data archive centers, RDCs, research data centers. And they are providing access to personal sensitive data. This is data which cannot be put in the wild. You just put it on a website and everybody can download it. No, please don't. This is data where access has to be restricted according to, for example, DSGVO or GDPR in English. And so they provide access and means and processes and technologies to be able to work with this data. And actually, there's a quite vivid network of about 40 such research data centers in Germany, including, for example, the RKI, the Robert Koch Institute, where researchers can work with data under these special circumstances. And Consort SVD is bringing together this network and including it into the national data infrastructure, which is, from my perspective, very nicely because they know how to deal with personal and sensitive data. And this is something we see in more and more disciplines being very relevant, including, for example, medicine. So solutions that that allow us to work with patient data, they need to be respectful of GDPR, of course. And so bringing together all the expertise that we have in Germany to solve this task, for example, for medicine, but also in other areas, this is very valuable. Let's continue with NFDI for biodiversity. I think this has been an underestimated topic for a long time, but now we see that everything is connected together on this planet. So we see a climate crisis, which is being well covered in the media. But at the same time, we also see a crisis in biodiversity. So the number of existing species is decreasing every day in numbers that are really frightening. And so we have to deal with that. And therefore, biodiversity, ecology, and environmental data, they are a crucial, if not say, they are the base to come up with ideas how to save the planet, you could say, in many respects. So it's a very important topic. It recently has some more media coverage, but in fact, I think it has not yet enough traction, because we have to solve this problem very, very quickly, along with the climate change. It's a network of, I think, around 50 actors who collect and work with biodiversity data. And so it's a good starting point, but again, we have to be included into the international perspective here. So this is also one of the consortia who's very well connected with many international partners. Mm-hmm. Let's continue with NFDI for CAT. It's the NFDI for science is related to catalysis. So CAT is, sometimes we make this little joke. It's not cats. It's the catalysis. And this is one this is a consortium who has a, let's say, a narrower focus, but the focus is very important. Again, catalysis is one of the research areas which also has the potential to solve huge problems that we have, including making contributions to the climate change or solutions for the climate change. So it's about chemical engineering and process engineering. Catalysis actually is a fairly complex area, if I understand it correctly. I do have some chemical knowledge, but I'm not an expert there. What I also learned is it's an interdisciplinary field, which is very interesting. So it's an interdisciplinary field of sciences that has as a goal to have efficient production of a wide range of products for different industries and at different production scales. And this is one of the consortia that have a strong link to industry. In fact, the idea for this consortium, if I know correctly, came from industry. So a lot of industrial partners said, we need a central point. We need metadata schema, which are harmonized and which are harmonized across our industrial sector. And they stimulated the formation. And luckily, there were academic partners who took up that challenge and created NFDI for CAT. And as of now, it is really one, also very, all of them are very active. It's also a very active consortium, which is rather small and focused, but which covers the whole catalysis area. Next is NFDI for CHEM, which is directly linked to CAT, you could say. So CAT and CHEM are a nice tandem, you could say. NFDI for chemistry is a more broad consortium. So here, a lot of different areas from chemistry are brought together in this consortium. And here, the ultimate aim is to have an open infrastructure for fair research data for all kinds of chemistry data. It's data producers and users from university and non-university research institutes that are coming together here. They include also, for example, the German Chemical Society. So very often these domain-specific societies are being included as partners or via letters of intent. And in NFDI for Chem, this is very prominently being done. There's also the Bunsen Society and the German Pharmaceutical Society. So they really include a lot of stakeholders here to bring together all relevant partners. And the key steps here is to collect, store, process, analyze, disclose, and reuse research data for chemistry. So it's the whole research data lifecycle that should be covered. So CHEM in contrast to CAD, for CAD, is a very broad approach here. And having both gives us the opportunity to understand a discipline very specifically and to solve at the same time larger central problems. So, and this is a nice example of this this too, but we have this in many different areas. So also in medicine, for example, we will later see we have GHDA, but we also have microbiota. We also have NFDI for health. So we have certain clusters in our network.
By the way, Chem is one of these examples that I, from being or having an outside perspective, kind of would say do a fantastic job in public relations. They have really they put a lot of investment in and time and effort into their community work, their work of showcasing what they're doing, what they're offering. So they have these user surveys online. They have a bunch of resources online from their knowledge base to their terminology service and electronic lab notebooks and et cetera. So they're really doing, this is one of the examples that I would always put forth when showing, hey, this is a really cool way of communicating what they're actually doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And luckily we have many of these examples. So we have many consortia that are doing a great job there for their own discipline. Mm-hmm. And jointly, this also nicely shows how we work. So there's, let's say this, this communicators, how do you call it? Kreis. It's the circle of communicators where we bring together communicators from the various consortia, including for Chem, but including also the others, and always speak how we can, bring together or how we can do jointly a better promotion of what we are doing.
Yeah.
Because one thing is to convince the own community, but it's a different thing to convince outside target groups like politics or like the society in general. And we can only jointly do this. So it's very good to have these really cool engagements and then bring together this for a joint communication and marketing activities.
And it's not only so much about convincing, but the stories that you can tell from inside the consortiums are so interesting that it would be a shame to not bring them outside. There's
Absolutely.
So much stuff going on, and as soon as somebody would understand what's coming out of these consortiums and grasp and get a hold of it, you actually wouldn't need so much convincing. Of course, you always need convincing for certain types of people, for certain types of organizations, institutes, etc. And there's always the underlying argument of that you need to prove what you're doing with the funds that you receive from tax money, etc. But there's so much interesting stuff going on, and as soon as these consortiums can push some of that out in the world, there's a lot of interest points by nature.
Absolutely, and you named one prototype, and I would like to use, if I may, I would like to say a word on the prototype. You named electronic lab notebooks. Mm-hmm. It's one of the prototypes that are being built. And this is like where a number of consortia are coming together to build one infrastructure for a certain problem. And in this case, it's CAD, CHEM, it's also for Inge, it's Fairmat, so it's all the consortia from the material sciences and the engineering disciplines along with the chemistry in this, institutes. And they are solving the problem that in many laboratories, as of now, the integration is not yet seamless. So you do experiments with a number of different laboratory equipment, but the equipment is not yet fully connected with each other. And if you create a data set, it's not yet automatically transferred into a trusted repository, for example, along with metadata. Also, the problem or the issue that along with the experimental data, you always need the metadata and you always need a certain description of what has been done and why it has been done, including paradata, for example, and including describing why maybe one experiment has certain issues because one of the laboratory tools maybe had a problem which was later detected, but when applying a certain script, you can still work with the data and things like that. So the whole experiment has to be seen as one experiment, and all the data that is necessary to work with the data has to be put in one place. So they actually do a bundling of everything that is attached to an experiment, and that should be automatized. So as a researcher, you only care about asking very good and the right research questions and conducting experiments to prove your hypotheses. And then the infrastructure should provide you with everything necessary to work then with the data, to replicate maybe the experiment and to understand how this experiment is related to other experiments and so on and so forth. And this is shortly being called an electronic lab notebook. But really what it is, it's a digital infrastructure for laboratory work in all different kinds of areas, especially chemistry and especially material sciences. But there are certainly different further science areas in which such an infrastructure can be of high value. And they, from the very beginning, started to collaborate on formulating the requirements for such an infrastructure, and now they are working on realizing it. So this is also showing that sometimes part of NFDI work on very concrete solutions, and then they bring it into the wild and actually the whole research can then benefit from that. And maybe disciplines who did not yet work on this area suddenly discover that there is such an infrastructure and start reusing this open infrastructure for their own purposes. And this is really at the heart of what NFDI is. That is why I thought it's a good idea to bring up this example here. Then continue with NFDI for Culture. It's the Consortium for Research on Research Data on Material and Immaterial Cultural Heritage. And this is one of our biggest, if not the biggest, consortium. It really covers everything ranging from architecture, art, music, to theater, dance, film, media studies. So it's really characterized by great diversity. It's university institutes, art and music colleges, art academies, galleries, libraries, archives, museums, and sometimes even individual researchers. It's really a huge endeavor, and they are doing a marvelous job in coordinating this huge network. And they are what I would call, and it's really in a very positive way, man, they are kind of nerdy. So they are very open to new technologies, and they try out many things, be it a collaborative infrastructures for working remotely together during pandemic times, but also coming up with digital infrastructures for working with research data, pictures, videos, and so on and so forth. And one of their big issues is that, so it's very easy to work with data from past centuries, let's say like this. So Mozart and Bach, it's well understood because data is publicly available, be it texts or be it the music pieces. But if you want to work with modern art, then very often there's this issue of licensing and licensing fees and so on. So even though, for example, a lot of music is available digital, it doesn't mean that you can use this digitally available data for your own research, but rather you would have to pay for it a lot of money. And a single research institute would not have the money to pay all that. So one of the issues is to come up with a solution to be able to do research on actual artwork as of today, but at the same time not being obliged to pay all these licensing fees. So it's something in the area of ethical and legal and social aspects, especially the legal focus, that is very prominent in NFDI for Culture. Let's continue with NFDI for Health. So this is bringing owls to Athens here in this podcast. It's the NFDI of personal health data. And this is, of course, closely related to what GHDA is doing. It aims to build a comprehensive inventory of research data in Germany about three different areas, actually. It's epidemiological data, it's public health data, and it's clinical trial data. I, as a patient, always thought that all this data is available and nicely stored somewhere, and we can do all these nice studies so that public health can be advanced in huge steps. But I've learned the contrary is the case. And so I'm also personally very thankful that this initiative has gained traction and is now being working on starting to have first a comprehensive inventory, and then also start working on how can we use these personal sensitive data in a respectful manner, but at large scale. This is my view here. And this is coming back to this special protection question. So we need dedicated access processes, like I mentioned at Consort SVD. So you have to find ways so that the data is only stored in highly secured environments and access is very limited, and you can never really find ways to de-anonymize the data, so to speak, to identify individuals. But at the same time, there's also other issues. It also starts with where the patients are. So as a patient, for example, I have to sign a document so that my data can be used for research. And it's an ongoing discussion how we can improve the situation so that this data can be used in large scale to better analyze what is happening in society. Actually, some of industrial players have used data sets in this area, and they just collect it because they own the infrastructure in which such data is being created. But of course, they only grant limited, let's say it positively, they grant limited access to research. But I think we clearly need a much better access and a much better databases. And NFDI for Health is the place where this database is currently being created.
It's probably also one of the examples where we can see that there is a lot of actionable data analysis coming out of this. For example, with the COVID-19, I think the task force is at at Health, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Good that you mentioned that. So when I started my first day in office was March 1st, 2020.
Oh.
And I had 2 weeks of office work with my first two employees. And then there was this legendary Friday where things were starting and happening, and the word pandemic occurred very frequently in the 8 o'clock news. And so at Friday afternoon, we all three sit together and said, what is happening around us here? And I said, well, please take your laptops and your mouse and keyboards home. And on Monday, we see what happened. Yeah. And then starting on Monday, there was the complete lockdown in Germany. And that changed, of course, the whole thing. So we had to start right into the pandemic. And NFDI for Health was starting at that point of time. And luckily, they took up the challenge and said, we need to do something very quickly. So they created this COVID-19 task force, which you just mentioned. And I think we all can be very grateful for paving the way to work with pandemic data that the task force has been established.
Yeah. I would assume that, Konrad, this is also the consortia where ZBMeet is one of the partners, right?
We, basically, Juliane Pflug is the speaker of that consortium, so this is why I'm pretty close to that, but out of neutrality, I didn't want to push this here now too far, but said, this is definitely, as you mentioned, something that is beyond basic research, I would say, but was especially in that point of time crucial or very helpful for getting more insights and hopefully also doing some or taking some decisions.
If you mention Juliane Pflug, maybe it's worth mentioning also Iris Pigert, right, from the BIPs, and those were the key persons to, in my view, hopefully I don't miss anything, but those, they just said, this is the challenge, we have to act now. Let's create this task force. Let's do this.
I mean, this is probably something that you could say about all of the consortia, but there's really interesting stuff falling out of NFD for Health. For example, these evidence maps for long COVID effects and results, etc. So very practical things that can be used to basically politically act and do policy. Even short-term policy based on this data, which is one of the things where you can immediately pull when somebody asks, okay, what is it about with all these formal infrastructure and all the systems that you build, and you have to invest a lot of time to organize this and to get it straight and to control it and to govern it. What's coming out of this? And this is something that you can immediately pull and say, hey, this is the research that comes out that is directionally actionable by policy if they want to, or by politics rather, if they want to lean on it. So fantastic argument.
Absolutely. Yeah. Then last but not least for the first round, it's NFDI for Eng. So the NFDI for engineering sciences. And this represents basically large parts of the German engineering research landscape. It's all kinds of different areas in the engineering landscape. To me, it was also an area in which I had previously worked. So I knew lots of stuff that was ongoing, but I also learned that there's much more diversity in engineering than I previously expected. And NFDI for Eng really brings together many of these areas. They came up with the idea of having archetypes that describe certain aspects in the engineering processes. And each of these archetypes is, you can say, is describing a use case in engineering where digitization plays a key role. And the archetype is meant to describe it in a way so that all people working on it share the same goal, share the same vision, but also this is how they explain it to other partners. So again, here we have yet another example for a very nice presentation of what actually is being done into this NFDI consortium. They work on common standards for research data management in the area of engineering. So it's shared metadata, but also shared infrastructure. And the engineering sciences have as a specialty that the FAIR principles should be provided, but the data should not be open per se. So it's important to distinguish between applying the FAIR principles and making data available as open data. We already had the example of private sensitive data in the area of social sciences and also medicine, which you cannot simply due to legal restrictions and also due to the sensitive nature of the data, you cannot provide it as open data. And in engineering, it is also a requirement that you can distinguish between data that is publicly and openly available and data that is available only to certain user target groups. And then you have to provide means so that these user groups can seamlessly work with this data. And this has to do with, of course, economic reasons, that a lot of engineering work is being done in the industrial context where you want to be faster than competitors, for example, and you want to have a competitive advantage. And of course, working with data and simulations nowadays is a way to achieve competitiveness in such areas. So for good reasons, the data should be fair, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, but only accessible in certain contexts. And NFDI for Eng aims to address this for the engineering side.
There's a very good description what's the difference between FAIR data and open data by GoFAIR. We will link this here for everybody who would like to dive deep in this, because this is an important distinction. And sometimes things can be FAIR and open, and sometimes you have to choose one. And at least for making stuff FAIR there, these guiding principles are key, and openness is then another perspective. And that has to be negotiated often, if how open stuff can be.
NFDI for Eng is, by the way, also one of the consortia. I'm not sure if all of them have done it, but at least I know that they have done it, who published at least an excerpt from their funding proposal on Zenodo. I think a bit over 100 pages, so it's not everything from the funding proposal. But this is really interesting to read, and also to kind of look at the document, how it's structured, how you would lay out the ideas of these consortia. So they have done it. Most of the other consortia, I think, they have also published their letter of intent, etc. But I know that because I've looked at this document, and we'll link it. It's an interesting read.
I can also say, Matthias, the one from NFDI for Microbot is also on the way there, but others have done this as well. Not all of them, but many have done this. And I think the limit was 120 pages, and clearly the financial part is often removed for the in the public documents, but the core ideas are then there, and basically the cleaned up versions are then available to the public. Some on Zenodo, some are on Rio Journal. Yeah, we can link a few.
Cool. Nice.
Concludes round first.
Well, we finished the first round. Yeah. That was quite an endeavor, I have to say.
We have our deepest respect. So let's take the second round.
All right. We start with Bird, of course. So Bird at NFDI is covering economics. And in that, it nicely fits to Consort SVD from a certain perspective, but addresses the focus of business and economic and related data all in one place, as they like to say it. The idea is to apply artificial intelligence and other clever means for statistical analysis to to data coming from the economical sciences. And the economical sciences over the past decade discovered that also different media types are of interest. So, of course, they have a long history in tracking what the DAX does and other stock market tickers. But they are increasingly they are focusing on using videos, images, audios, in addition to text data, and sometimes even mobile data nowadays, to make economic predictions, for example. And so the BERT consortium addresses this: how can you work with different media types, and how can you work with big data in different media types? Because a lot of these data types, they explode. As soon as you start collecting them, the data volume easily explodes. So you have to understand how to take care of that. So at the end of the day, BERT will provide an infrastructure to deal with these different media types for economic research questions.
Fun fact. I heard a couple of months back a podcast where this consortia was mentioned, and mm-hmm. I was writing aside, so it was only one ear and half of my brain listening to the podcast, actually. So I listened to it and I understood Bird of NFDI and talking about ducks. And what I understood is Bird as in the bird and ducks as in the duck. But it's and then realizing after 10 minutes that it's not about ornithology.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
The brain plays too.
Okay. It also can be said, so I highlighted that we have four sections mm-hmm. at the moment. What we do is we have a strategic process in which we identify topics, cross-cutting topics. And the first four sections stem from the first rounds of strategic workshops along with the first round of consortia. And when we redid this workshop series jointly with the first and the second round of consortia, we re-evaluated cross-cutting topics. And at the end of the day, industry engagement came up as a new topic for a section. And of course, BERT and other related consortia were pushing that, including also the engineering and material sciences. And they said, yeah, we need to establish means to closely work with industry. And so we are in the process of having probably a fifth section during the course of 2023. And BERT is along with others, at the core of pushing this initiative. Let's continue with Daphne for NFDI. Daphne stands for Photon and Neutron Experiments. So this is really coming from the nature sciences. It's about an open and fair infrastructure for RDM in this area. And it deals with data coming from photons and synchrotron light sources and neutrons. So it's these really large scale experiments where you try to understand what happens on the micro level of material sciences. It's a quite diverse field of research. There are thousands of researchers worldwide that are working in these fields together. And I think it's even thousands in Germany that are working on this on this issue. And they collect huge volumes of data. So in comparison to what I talked about BERT, this is orders of magnitudes bigger. So it's about petabytes that are being generated every year. This is really large volume. The trend is rising because more and more of these experiments are being conducted. And the sheer data volume is one of the big challenges they have to address. In this case, we don't have privacy issues, at least I'm not aware of. So this data is more or less openly available, but the sheer volume really is what has been taken care about. You cannot simply move this data from one place to the other place. So for example, there you have to think about how to get the algorithm to the data so that you can make experiments. In other cases, you bring the data to the algorithm, but in this case, very often you have to bring the algorithms to the data. And one interesting thing what I learned there is that if you deal with such experiments, those are experiments that are unique. So if you conduct such an experiment, this also holds for astronomy, for example. If you make a snapshot of the galaxy, so that would be the contrast, the macro level, then this experiment is unique in time. You can never repeat this experiment. Whereas in other scientific disciplines, you aim to have experiments that are repeatable. So others can see if you did it correctly, and they can prove the hypothesis with their own data from an own experiment they conducted according to what has been done in a different way. But in this case, it's irreversible. So time progresses and matters change on the macro and the micro level. And you can only do it once and then have to work with the data afterwards. So whatever is wrong in producing the data cannot be corrected afterwards. And this is a very special requirement they have here. I think they also have it in other nature sciences consortia as well as a task. Then we have Fermat. That is the FAIR Data Infrastructure for Condensed Matter Physics and Chemical Physics of Solids. So quite closely related, actually, to DAPHNE from a certain perspective. And it's really about, exploring new materials. And more you can do digital simulations of materials. One of the problems, as I understood there, is the high complexity of potential material candidates. So if you simply would use all the atoms and molecules that are there, that are not being nicely described, and you would try to have a brute force approach of simply recombining every possible solution, we cannot do this at the moment. It simply exceeds our technological abilities of simulations because of the high high number of variations that there are. So finding attractive materials relies on very good simulations and on having very good hypotheses, what kind of combinations of materials are interesting for certain. And Fermat is trying to make a significant progress in this area. We continue with, let me think, MARDI. That is the Mathematical Research Data Initiative. Again, nature sciences here. But here, mathematics is really at the core. And mathematics, you could say, is kind of a cross-functional discipline because so many other disciplines rely on mathematics, including physics, including social sciences, by the way. Some people always say all sciences rely on mathematics, but some other people disagree with this point of view. But certainly it's true that many, many different research areas rely on the mathematical foundations that are there and that are being explored. And so it makes a lot of sense that the MARDI consortium takes care about providing better access to mathematical knowledge. So all disciplines should have the best possible access to mathematical methods and mathematical knowledge, and MARDI aims to implement that. One of the things is, again, having a standardized metadata schema to describe mathematical knowledge, formulas, and theories, and then have a data infrastructure which is capable of providing analysis on top of that. And so it's really integrating different areas from mathematics, like computer algebra, scientific computing, statistics, increasingly machine learning and artificial intelligence. And MARDI tries to come up with not only data, but also workflows, how you can execute mathematical methods on volumes of data.
By the way,
all right.
The proposal from them, which is also to be found in Zenodo, is absolutely worth reading because it's a glimpse into a completely foreign world for me. Alone how much mathematical research and excellence clusters there exists besides the Mathematical Society and the European Mathematical Society is fantastic to get a glimpse. And you have like all these little snippets for them. So it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We continue with NFDI for Data Science, which has strong link to MARDI, of course. It's the NFDI for Data Science and Artificial Intelligence in the long run. And this really is a consortium coming from computer science with lots of expertise in everything related to data science and artificial intelligence. The idea is that also software and code are artifacts that are worth to be preserved and to be shared. Similar to research data. Because at the end of the day, the one thing is the research data that you have, but the second thing is to have a method being implemented in code, for example, in Python or in C or Java, and then execute that code over a certain data set. And you can only understand the result if you understand the data and the code. And NFDI for Data Science aims to make a better access to code, models, data itself, but also publications, by the way, in an integrated approach. So they just say there's digital artifacts in different flavors, and we have to provide the best possible access to that to automatize things. So NFDI for Data Science is very closely related to all nature sciences, but it actually has a link also to all other consortia. But at the end of the day, more and more disciplines are being reusing machine learning and knowledge representation to do analysis, along with statistical analysis. So NFDI for Data Science can be seen as a quite central consortium from the method perspective. Let's continue with NFDI for Earth. That is the NFDI consortium for the Earth System Sciences. It links with Dataplant, with biodiversity, and other related consortia. It's a quite big network. I think they have up to 60 partners in the network. And what I learned there is that the sciences of the Earth System Sciences, ESS in short, are quite diverse. So for me, this was this huge thing of climate research, of course. But there's a lot of sub-disciplines, that are being doing research there. So one of the aims of NFDI for Earth is, bringing these various groups together and then work on standardization so that data can better be shared, across these disciplines. It's really a community-driven approach, as all consortia. But again, here we have a quite huge community in contrast to other NFDI consortia. I think it's one of these consortia. Actually, all consortia are working on big problems we currently have. But not all problems are so well known as the climate crisis, but NFDI for Earth certainly is in the center of finding solutions how to better deal with the climate crisis. Let's continue with microbiota. And here, Konrad, you should tell everything about microbiota. Let's switch
okay,
the role.
Okay, I was interested. Do a great job. Just let's pause you for a second. You do a great job, and I'm doing this here, describing these details of each of these consortia. That's so great, and that would be quite a challenge doing this while I'm here, and basically I can criticize. It's not precisely what it means.
I take it back, Konrad. I take it back. Why do I so? I want Matthias to keep his promise.
Yes. Exactly. Please
continue. I do it.
Well, okay. We can talk about the confidence level of me worshipping you. So don't worry about that.
No, just kidding. But we are in a podcast, so it should be also entertaining here, right? So microbiota. Now I give it a shot.
Absolutely, okay? Please.
It's the NFDI for microbiota research. What is microbiota? It's related to bacteria, archaea, unicellular, eukaryotes, if I hopefully pronounced correctly. And last but not least, viruses. And this is why it is, of course, so important in the current yeah, we don't have a pandemic situation, according to many public people, but we still suffer from it. So, of course, to better understand what is going on with viruses is at the center of microbiota. So it's adding to the consortia in the life sciences area, playing a crucial role in human and environmental health. Actually, at the core, if I understand it correctly, is the characterization of the different species or microbial species, and to better understand what is actually ongoing there. What I've learned is that we know so little what we should know to have better treatments. So I always thought that after finding a virus, you know exactly what to do, but I've learned the contrary. And so I think it is quite important to really push forward this area of research here. It has it's like a star that has beams into many related areas, including medicine, agriculture, including also climate protection, by the way. So it's also quite of a cross-cutting research topic, you could say, with effects in many different related areas. Again, it's about generation of data sets that can be reused according to the FAIR principles. And it's about allowing for, I guess, simulations in a very scalable way, because you have to do a lot of research there, a lot of repetitions of experiments to make substantial scientific contributions here. Microbiota, if I remember correctly, also has about 50 partners. Please correct me here, or even more than 50 partners. So it's also a quite large network, and therefore acts as a kind of mediator between different subcommunities, and helping to better understand what the different communities do, and then exchange their data and also link this to other NFDI communities. Of course, here, again, there's this technical aspect of having a probably cloud-based infrastructure, to work with the data, to make data analysis, which has to be scalable enough to deal with also large volumes of data. And therefore, microbiota has a focus on processes, metadata, but also on infrastructure.
Okay, now we have a... Yeah,
I hope I did somehow well.
Now we have a problem because we want to record a dedicated one regarding NFDI for microbiota plus maybe something else. But now it's solved. Sorry, it's already done. Well, very well done. That's exactly that.
Okay, yeah, you can take.
Yeah, maybe I should do it like this. No, this is really exactly it. That we also do the data processing is also a key part. The workflows, as you said before, for others, it's also the step of having data and translating this into insight. That this is also a key part that needs to be documented, and it's in a lot of life sciences the case. And exactly that. So nothing to add. Thank you so much for that.
All right, let's continue with. We still have NFDI Mattwerk. So this is the NFDI for material sciences and materials engineering, right? Again, it's about materials. So you see there's a certain cluster in the area of material sciences and materials engineering. Maybe it's good to say the German words. It's Materialwissenschaften, but it's also Werkstofftechnik. And as an industrial engineer, actually, I also had Werkstoffkunde as part of my studies. So I also know a little bit about the field. In fact, in the German material sciences or Materialwissenschaft and Werkstofftechnik, those are two separate research disciplines. And Mattwerk brings together these two different disciplines. And they address topics, or they try to come up with better research data for the fields of energy, mobility, also including environment. So materials that can better enable us to have these cool autonomous driving vehicles that are, for example, more lightweight, that are very durable at the same time, that you can recycle them very easily. So it's really about having materials that also contribute to the climate crisis in contrast to materials that actually are the reason for partly the reason for our climate crisis. And to make this shift for the whole German and international and global society, material sciences actually play a quite crucial role. And therefore, I think it's quite good to have a certain cluster with a number of consortia. Mattwerk aims again to have a standardized metadata scheme to describe their data. Also, they do a lot of experiments, and they have experimental workflows which they describe. So again, here is a consortium which also benefits and contributes to the electronic lab notebook infrastructure, if I know correctly. They create an ontology to describe materials, and they want to actually, at the end of the day, they want to make all the research data they already have better interoperable. So this is a common story to all consortia, and in this case, for material sciences. They have a number of different use cases in which they try to have lighthouse effects. So they try to establish, they try to make it running for one use case and then show that this is a method that can be applied also to other use cases, which then at the end of the day can have a huge impact on many different experimental workflows in the material sciences. Okay, we come to the next letter, would be P, punch, punch for NFDI. It's particles, universe, nuclei, and hadrons. And punch is very closely, really closely connected to Daphne from a certain point of view. If you talk to the researchers, they are doing completely different things. so is the case for many research areas which are in the same area, but of course having their own foci. And here we really bring together the expertise from the particle sciences, the astroparticle physics in particular, and hadron and nuclear physics and astronomy. So we have this idea of having a snapshot of the galaxy around us, for example. So again, it's huge volumes of data that have to be addressed. Again, it's this problem of irreversibility of an experiment. If you make a snapshot, it's there. You have to work and you have to live with that. You cannot repeat this point in time. It is the point in time, and that's it. And it is the snapshot. So you have to work with that. And that raises many questions. So, for example, one of the things in astronomy is that, if a research area is really producing large volumes of data, it's astronomy. And so for them, one of the key questions is how can we reduce the data size quickly so that we only need to store fractions of the raw data? But at the same time, they ask the question, can we cut down raw data? What kind of information do we lose if we don't keep the raw data? It's a dilemma. You know that you cannot keep the raw data for economical reasons, but also for practical reasons. How can you have a potentially lossless reduction of the data volume? And if it's not lossless, what do you actually lose? Can you make an informed decision about what you are losing by compressing the data, for example, or by keeping only certain data points? And Punch tries to make a significant step forward there. So at the end of the day, they want to create a data platform according to the data, to the FAIR principles. And they want to be a nucleus for lots of different further research endeavors. Okay, we're almost through. We still have Text Plus from the second round. Sorry. So Text Plus is the consortium which deals with a particular focus of data, and that is language and text-based data. And so Text Plus is addressing, in contrast to other domains, so the other consortia usually have a certain scientific discipline as a focus. And Text Plus is interesting because it focuses on the nature of the data. As I said, language and text-based research data. And since we have so many texts, in all kinds of different disciplines, you could also see this as a very central or cross-cutting consortium, which has contributions to many different other scientific questions that have to be answered. And especially since we are living in an age now where we have so much text that artificial intelligence is providing functionalities that are kind of unexpected to some. So, I mean, in the artificial intelligence community, we have somehow foreseen that at some point of time, there will be things like ChatGPT, which is currently an ongoing issue. But there are so many other examples, right? So for me, it's just one out of many examples of what you can achieve with machine learning techniques and with knowledge representation. And so for us, it's really a time in which we live where we have a lot of textual data, which provides us with a lot of information and knowledge about society, about science, about all kinds of different things. And understanding how to process this data in a meaningful way, therefore, is quite crucial. And TextPlus addresses this crucial field of methods and technologies and solutions. So it doesn't have a domain focus, but it has a data focus here, which is very nicely complementing what we are doing in NFDI. TextPlus actually is not limited to existing data, because I'm saying we are living in an age of, but the idea is really to systematically expand the portfolio, let's say, call it portfolio, the portfolio of available textual data in different research disciplines. And they do this in close cooperation, consultation with various communities. And therefore, having TextPlus inside of NFDI is, I think, a brilliant idea, because that makes it possible for them to very closely interact with all other research disciplines. So it was, I think, a very nice addition. But I would say this actually for every single consortium. To generalize this again,
but they kind of have a really special positioning, because if you think about data, you probably also think about automatically about metadata, and metadata is yet another form of text, right? In most cases, it's some form of text. Mm-hmm. So you implicitly always ask about the interoperability of this data, which will be mainly text-based. Of course, you will have mm-hmm. code, but code is kind of unique, leaving out the fact that you could have multiple programming languages, but it's kind of unique. Mathematics, so formulas and algorithms are kind of uniquely described, but text, you have a descriptive part of a text, and you have the part that how text is understood. And that's a very interesting question. I think also in terms of under ethical perspectives. So with writing a text in a certain way and understanding a text in a certain way, what can happen is that you introduce bias, for example, mm-hmm. which is an ethical question, and which is also ultimately Absolutely. An interoperability question. So I think their positioning is really interesting.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And bias is one of the top things that we have to better understand when applying machine learning, statistical analysis, knowledge representation on a large mm-hmm. scale. For the first time, we can model bias. And by modeling bias, we can reduce bias. So that is the opportunity that lies in front of us. However, what we currently see is the opposite. So in social networks, for example, by having filter bubbles, you actually you also identify, or the systems identify bias, but they put a focus on bias. So they do the contrary of reducing bias, and this, of course, sometimes can have devastating effects, as we have seen, unfortunately. So bias as a topic is very important, and TextPlus, I fully agree, aims to make a significant contribution here. Maybe I should say one thing about the plus. So it's called TextPlus, and the plus sign indicates that not only language-based resources, data for speech and language are being at the focus, but also multimodal data. So They also have an interest in understanding how text is linked to other data modalities. And therefore, the plus is an indicator for openness. And I think this is just state of the art, because nowadays we have lots of text, but we also have lots of images, videos, and even other modes. And only if we understand them in a context, we have the full picture. Mm-hmm. All right. So this has put us through the first two rounds, which is pretty cool. I would recommend, since the third round hasn't started officially, maybe I just name exactly. them. And we can make a second
Excellent.
Podcast.
Yeah, let's do that.
and give them a bit time.
That sounds very good. Yeah, let's quickly go through the names, just that they are somewhere there, that people know they exist, and without that depth, because they haven't started it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, but they're about to start in March, so it's good to announce what is upcoming. I need to start with Fair Agro, F. This is agriculture. Mm-hmm. That was my previous example, actually, that came from the third mm-hmm. round. very quickly, it's about the agricultural sciences. It combines research from different areas in the agricultural sciences and brings them together. Then we have NFDI for bioimage. That is the NFDI for microscopy and bioimaging analysis. So this is again in the life sciences area, and it has a focus on imaging as data source. Also a focus on a certain type of experimentation, and that is microscopy. NFDI for energy addresses the energy system research, which is linked to basically everything we do as a society, because we need so much energy for anything, for our mobility, for heating our homes, for industrial processes, and so on and so forth. And of course, not only quite recently, but quite recently, we have seen dramatically how dependent we are on CO2 producing resources for energy production. And we have to find ways around that. That has become obvious. So NFDI for energy, you could say we cannot do without it, if you really put it to the point, especially given the current situation. But I mean, this is known for some longer time now. So it's just obvious that we have to do with that. Then we have NFDI for immuno. That will be the NFDI for immunology. So again, in the life sciences, it's an initiative to focus on a number of already existing federated repositories. So there is already a network of repositories in the Charité, in DRFZ, in the TUM, and so on. So it's really a network of German data repositories. And NFDI for immuno, aims to connect them in a better way. And with less respect, it's quite closely related to microbiota. You will probably know it to GHDA and to NFDI right. for health, of course. Then we have NFDI for memory. That is the Consortium for the Historically Oriented Humanities. And this is quite closely connected to Text Plus, of course, but also to the social and humanities, social sciences and humanities. And the idea is to focus on a long-term and sustainable research data infrastructure. So the long-term archival of digital objects is at the core of For Memory, which is also nicely phrased with the name, I think. So For Memory does really a good job in nailing it down to what they are. Yeah,
that's the comment that I have on my Spickzettel here, whatever that is. That is the most great name of all, because it's so telling.
Yeah, it's storytelling in itself. It's true. So it's covering especially those disciplines that use historical methods and that aim to use research data for, let's say, the contextualization of history. Next, we have NFDI for objects, which is, again, closely linked to For Memory and to Text Plus, you could say, and other consortia in this area. This aims to address digital objects. And it's actually addressing the cultural heritage of about 3 million years of human history and history of our environment. So they are addressing how to digitize digital objects coming from all kinds of different areas, but which rely on having the full picture of how humanity has been developed. Last but not least, we have NFDI Cross CS, it is called, and that is the National Research Data Infrastructure for and with computer science, and therefore the X in the name. Here we have the goal to bring together all different sub-branches of computer sciences, and there are many of them. Artificial intelligence and knowledge representation is just one area. We have databases, information systems, workflows, security. So there's lots of different areas, and NFDI Cross CS aims to bring together all these different disciplines. In fact, what I always think is very cool at NFDI for Cross CS is the picture they choose for themselves. And it's I think it's the only consortium that puts the human into the center. It's a picture of many, it's an abstract picture of the people who came up with a proposal. And computer science has a lot of, I'm a computer scientist, so this is my homegrown turf. But computer science is, of course, about formal stuff, program languages, hardware. But it's so much about people, and so much about people interacting in a meaningful, full, and effective manner. How we exchange our ideas, how we code, so how we formalize our methods into something that is executable on machines that we have built. And so therefore, I like the picture of NFDI Cross CS very much. And to that respect, NFDI Cross CS is also kind of very central because computer sciences are now being used and reused in many different, or results from computer science research are now being used and reused in many different disciplines. And very often they are applied, but sometimes also other disciplines contribute to central aspects of computer science. So it's good to have them on board.
Wow. So those were all consortiums, and this was amazing. I'm pretty sure there are many more details that people like to share, and this is already said. We might talk to some of the consortia to present this even further. And I think you did a great job guiding us through this and all these ideas. And having this all in mind, I mean, we had this term already that is somehow a guiding star, I would say, this phrase of one NFDI. So we want to bring all this together. And if people listen to this now and see, okay, this is basically the whole scientific system. Exactly. How can they work together and get this into one infrastructure, not a silos of different fields again? If we think in this, maybe you can here at the end of this discussion now go a little bit into the challenges, but also the opportunities that are there, and what this one NFDI brings and this approach brings, maybe a little bit of an outlook where this should go on the long term.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, one NFDI is such a short word and such a big meaning. Mm-hmm. In fact, the first challenge is that we have to define what does one NFDI actually mean. And we are now in a position to address this challenge. Last week we had the consortia assembly. And as one of the decisions that have been made, we agreed on a shared vision and mission. And this is the first step, that we agree on what do we ultimately want to achieve at the end of the day. And having talked now for about 2 hours, I don't think I have to rephrase everything. But we put this down in words so that we can communicate this also to new members, but also to further stakeholders in the system and to outside target groups, you could say, outside of NFD. And to me, what really is one NFDI in future is that as a German scientific system, we act together to provide infrastructure for all kinds of different sciences in a sustainable, seamless, scalable, and so on and so forth way. And we can only do this together. So in that line of argumentation, creating trust between the different scientific disciplines is a central aspect of this one's NFDI idea. Now, if we achieve this trust, and I see many signs that we are on a good way here to have such a trust in the network, then of course we need to solve the individual challenges in the scientific communities. And that is part of the big solution. So for every scientific domain, life sciences, engineering, social sciences and humanities, what did I miss? Sorry, the fourth. Steh auf dem Schlauch, as we say in German. Okay, but so for all four big scientific disciplines, we need to understand where they are and what the next big step is. And we need to solve this. We need to have these individual contributions. By doing this in the larger context, we are able to generalize some of these solutions and also to stimulate the discussion by having multiple perspectives on the problem. So, for example, if we talk about the long-term preservation of data, it is easily being said that we want to store data for a long time, but there are so many facets, and we really need to understand what kind of data do we keep. We have to answer questions like, which data do we store? Do we keep all the raw data? Do we keep aggregated data? And so on and so forth. For how long do we actually store all this? Do we have a concept for storing for longer and for shorter storing periods, for example? So therefore, and this is just one example, but we need to have the multiple perspectives from the various disciplines to come up with a single answer that is sustainable for Germany. So that is the second point I see, the second aspect, that we have this shared vision. So we need trust and a shared vision, shared mission, solve the individual problems according to this mission and vision. And then on the larger scale, identify, and that is the third pillar, identify central services that we need to glue all this together. And by having the base for NFDI initiative starting also in March, we also have upcoming a building block to address the third pillar. And only then we can achieve this vision of one NFDI.
Yes.
Having looked over all of the whole construct, and I would assume that we have only scratched the surface at this point in time, even though you have already given such a concise and in-depth insight. But there's actually two sayings, I would say, that immediately come to mind. One is that in the case of NFDI, and probably even in the case of similar initiatives, the whole is actually greater than the sum of its part, right? You can really see that here, because even though you have a number of different consortia, you can immediately see that most of them are connected to each other anyway. And there's probably a lot of collaboration planned in between those to really make or use the potential that is there. And the second part that I recognized while you were introducing us to all the individual consortia is one thing that my computer scientist professor always said. He said, if you want to go simple, you have to go really complex first. And that's so true when you look at the whole structure of consortia and what they are doing and how they finally link to each other and how they finally put the whole NFDI in a position to achieve its mission and provide the single service for research, basically, right?
Absolutely. It's so true. Thank you for sharing this comment. I can fully subscribe. It is often underestimated that if you have a very easily, if you have a user interface, let's make a concrete example. If you have a user interface that where users just say, oh yeah, I know exactly what to do, to press which button and then to expect which action. And then the system performs exactly this action and guides me to the next thing that I can do. To do this in a way that users are just happy is usually requiring a very detailed analysis of what the actual problem is you want to solve with the system and knowing exactly what to put where and which functionality to make visible and which functionality to hide and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of truth if you apply this to building technical systems. And I like this transfer to the to what we are doing with NFDI. It certainly has a similar aspect. Yeah.
The same professor also said, if you want to define what your light switch does, you have to define its position in the universe first. Which I found stupid back then, but the more I look into this stuff, the better I understand what he was trying to say with it.
Exactly. But I would have, I don't know, how, do you have another quote? I have another quote.
Go.
which nicely fits, which came to my mind when you started the quote. I thought, oh yeah, this is cool. Here's my contribution. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to walk far, you have to go together.
Yeah.
And we aim for the long shot with NFDI. We go together.
Jörg, this was quite an amazing ride. And as Matthias said, this was just scratching the surface, but I guess we should sit together in the near future or in the future and discuss the developments that happened in that time. And I'm pretty sure there will be lots of interesting developments. Any final thoughts or anything that we missed that should be said right now?
From my side, I'd like to use the opportunity to thank all collaborators, including you, for providing an environment where every single day I'm happy to work in.
Thank you so much. And I have to mirror this back because you are giving really the great foundation here for working in this. And I mentioned this before, it is very complex way of organizing all this, and there's a lot of communication happening, and you're moderating this in a really kind and open fashion, and this is really a great place to work as well in such a crazy setup. So Jörg, once again, thank you so much for your time. This is an amazing ride through all this. We will definitely revisit this. Also, we will talk to certain consortia and maybe also the sections to bring a little more insight into this, but you gave a great overview here. So thank you once again so much for your time. And yeah, let's stop here and see you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye.